Recording.
Hello, Ishmael. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. It's been a very good day by myself. It's been like that for the past couple of weeks. Well, not really by myself. At least I have my brother here, so
Oh,
but
so you,
technically could have been with way more people.
I'd like to welcome you to Stage Fright. Basically, a podcast that focused on the mediums that propagate art to people and basically the fears that we are currently facing as the mediums have to change.
Thank you for
I'd
having
like
me.
to advise you that this call is being recorded for content creation purposes. And I understand that you are co-founder of Speak Out Loud and Hear My Voice.
Correction. I'm the co-founder of Hear My Voice, which is a nonprofit organization focused on creating open and uncensored spaces for writers and poets. And Speak Out Loud itself is a program on its own, which I actually conceptualized in partnership with the city of Tshwane. So Speak Out Loud actually started way before Hear My Voice, well, a year before Hear My Voice was even conceptualized. So they are two separate entities. However, now they are entities that are working hand in hand. Through the nonprofit Hear My Voice, we've been working with the city of Tshwane to continue curating Tshwane Speak Out Loud and making it as big as it is right now.
So, I have one very important question to ask. Since you are organizing all this poetry and writing activities, what is the best performed poem you have ever witnessed?
Wow. The best performed poem I've ever witnessed. Oh, like there's so many. That's a very tricky question because I listen to so much poetry, especially when it comes to the Tshwane Speak Out Loud program, which I did not get into detail to, but just to give you an idea, is a poetry competition for the city of Tshwane poets and youth residents. And on a yearly basis, right, we receive about 200 on average applications, and we go to each and every region of city of Tshwane and get people to perform poetry. So there's usually on the auditions there's two stages where up to 30 people per audition compete, and stage one is 30 people performing poems, and then we halve that for the second round, and then 15 people perform. So just on one audition there's already so much poetry that one listens to. That's like 45 poems, so trying to actually think about that.
You can make a list if you prefer.
So let me
You
do
don't have
this
to order
rather.
it.
Let me do this rather, right? Let me tell you the poets whose performances I've loved, because it spanned across multiple poems of theirs as well. So since I've been in this game, if I put it that way, it has been Modise Sokgote.
I know. Church preach.
Right, he's amazing, and the way he puts together different elements beyond just poetry and words, the music, the sounds, the various art forms that he combines together is amazing. And that's always a full-blown show and amazing concept. And then there is Masai Sipuru as well.
Preach.
Who's doing a whole lot of great work combining poetry and theater. There's Emma Mabe. There's Torsten Kleer. who's
The
also doing
conflict.
amazing work. And one thing that you will notice about the poets that I'm mentioning now and the works that they do is that it's often a combination between spoken word and another art form. They do a whole lot of that, which I believe enhances the whole poem itself. And Bangi Gancho, and pretty much,
The
yes, the
godmother.
godmother of poetry. She's really doing so much to ensure that poetry is published, is listened to, is written. And of course, her poetry is also just as amazing as the people she's trying to get noticed through the various avenues that she has. And to close off, and this is by no means the only people that I really enjoy listening to. To close off is Len Eriksson, who's a poet from Sweden, that we
I've
had
never heard of them.
you should definitely listen to her. So we had the privilege of actually bringing her to South Africa last year, June, for Tshwane Speak Out Loud. And wow, she is super amazing. Definitely someone who you'll hear a lot, because since coming to South Africa, she's been doing a whole lot of work and trying to see how she can actually be a part of the South African spoken word scene as well. So you'll be hearing a whole lot of her, because she's been collaborating with various people like Kabiso Bibi. She's been a part of our live stream shows that we've been doing now since COVID-19 started and such. So she's definitely going to be making a name for herself within the South African poetry scene.
Okay, interesting. Well, speaking of Sweden, I'm actually considering my immigrating there because they didn't implement a restrictive lockdown. And I want to be free here, so I might hear her sooner rather than later.
Yeah, most likely, but take a note of something, right? For Sweden,
What?
and having been there twice already, for 2 years in a row, right, is that they are a bit different in terms of, they're very punctual, number one. Ivana, that's the one thing. If you say something is going to happen or a show is going to start at 8 p.m., people are there at 7:30, and by 8 p.m., everyone is sitting down watching the show, waiting for you to start. So, when it comes to us here in South Africa, we've gotten used to saying that if something starts at 8, just know it's actually going to start 4:15 or 1:30, because number one, as organizers, we are waiting for people to still come into the venue, to settle down and all of that.
Not
That's how
just
in
people,
Sweden.
but actual team members.
Exactly. The everyone, it's a whole, we've come to understand that when it comes to our industry and just how generally we work, whereby that side it's 8 is when things actually start. So it's a culture whereby for them it's, that's a thing, right? Being not, I wouldn't say obedient, but just adhering
Playing
to
your part.
certain, exactly, and adhering to certain things. So for them, not pretty much making a strict lockdown is because they've asked people to please stay at home, and a whole lot of people are actually still adhering or are listening to that request, So fortunately for them, they haven't had to explicitly say, yo, this is now a total lockdown. We're deploying the military and all of that.
Snitch on your neighbors for
Exactly,
jogging.
exactly. But who knows? Hey, they're taking a different stance. We're taking a different stance. Who knows which one works? And we're all just trying to see different ways of ultimately coming to the same end goal, and that is the end of COVID-19.
Okay, cool. But yeah, back to your original list, though. I think I've seen most of the people you mentioned on the Speak Out Loud stage. Medusa is probably my favorite poet in the country right now. And
I see why.
And who else? Her Masai. Mad respect to him. I think he's second in line. And what I really appreciate about Masai is he's always pushing it to the next level. Like,
Indeed.
I can't wait to hear the stuff he's about to write next year and the year after that, because he's always trying to improve on his own craft. If poetry was battle rap, he has the DNA of a battle cat, where he's like, where's the cipher? I need someone to spit these bars with and stuff like that. And yeah, Emma, she dropped her book. What was it? A clock of what? But I forgot
in.
The title. Yeah, a clocking in. And yeah, she has really documented quite a lot of or spoken from the female perspective quite well, the South African black female perspective quite well in her poetry and in her pieces. And I have enjoyed that. And I've seen her performances, and she understands that sometimes, you know, the poetry, especially if you're doing slam poetry, there's this pressure of killing the show. But sometimes you have to write what you write for yourself or for the people that you write in that specific piece for. And you might not kill the show, but two or three people in the audience are going to connect with what you shared, and that's going to mean a lot for them. And just having that means, yeah, you're doing something that's worth doing.
Exactly. And can I add, right?
Yeah.
Well, also this is like an open question as well. It's like, sometimes you should not be doing like your poetry for the claps and the snaps and all of that, right? Is it a must that you do that? And I feel like slam poetry and the poetry scene, specifically the competitive slam world, has not really forced, but then have gotten poets inclined to just do poetry for the snaps, for the claps and all of that, instead of actually writing what's important to you as the poet, as the writer, and speaking for certain groups of people, for example. Because there'll definitely be someone within a room that will relate to what you're writing, to what you're speaking about. But is it really worth now you sometimes even having to dumb down your work in order to get a majority of the people to understand and take it in and, you know, your finger snap and all of that?
Okay.
So
it's an interesting question. So you are in a very unique position in this question right now. Because one, we can both agree that poets mold their work, most poets, not all of them, to be more in line with the incentives that the stage provides them. Like in this case, the claps and the snaps and the cheers from the audience. Right? But then, on the other hand, Speak Out Loud has the spot for the winner. What has been the biggest amount you guys gave up?
So currently, Tony Speak Out Loud is giving out 30,000 rand for first place, 15,000 rand for second place, and 5,000 rand for third place. For first place, in addition to the cash, you also are guaranteed a tour internationally, right? As part of Hear My Voices exchange programs that we run, whereby we take South African poets to the world, and the world's poets, we bring them to South Africa. So those are the prizes. So collectively, for the first place, the prize can go up to about between 60 to 50 or 100,000 rand, depending obviously on various factors. Such as which country you get to go to and such. And the previous one, we've been fortunate enough to work with the Embassy of Sweden, and we got the previous winner, who's Masai Sipuru, to go to Sweden as well, and he toured there for 2 weeks, performing at various theaters, spaces, libraries, as well as one of the biggest platforms we've been able to get a poet is the Gothenburg Book Fair, which is the largest book fair in Scandinavia, which hosts 84,000 people every year over a span of 4 days. So he got to perform there, and the performance that he actually did was in commemoration of the South Africa being announced as the guest of honor for the 2020 Gothenburg Book Fair. So it was big, and a lot of people tuned into that. A lot has been written about it as well in the media. So a lot pretty much came out of his win, let's put it that way. So there's a whole lot of value.
Was that the performance recorded? I'd like to see it.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Oh,
We
good.
actually have it posted up on the Hear My Voice Facebook page. If you go to the video
Okay,
section,
cool. I'll look for it. Cool. All right. Yeah, so back to the question I wanted to ask. So since poets mold their writing to the incentives, how much do you think the 60,000 rands and the trips internationally have molded the poet that comes onto the Speak Out Loud stage?
Oh, right. Interesting question. The beginning of Speak Out Loud, and the whole intention was it of Speak Out Loud was to create a space where we get poets together to speak about what matters most to them, right? And with that platform, we've understood that it can easily get to a point whereby now people are just writing what will get them snaps, from the audiences and all of that. And obviously, you want to win that cash. It's a whole lot of money. And we've always wanted to create incentive. We believe that poets deserve these prizes with 1,000 rands. You have beauty pageants where the winners get a car, get 100,000, get 500,000, get 1 million even. You have music competitions that where it's a similar thing. Why can't that be the same for poetry, right? So that's what we've been striving towards. And with that, you do get the poets who then see this as, you know what, yeah, I'm gonna write specifically just to get crowds to snap at me and clap, and hopefully that will make me go to the next round. So we understand that that's definitely a factor. That I want to win is a factor in getting poets to write a certain way, to write about certain topics. But we encourage them to stick to writing about what they believe in. And we found, right, since Speak Out Loud has started, that it's actually those that really write straight from the heart who actually do progress. Those who just write for snaps and claps do not, right? And another factor that assists us in ensuring that those who really are about the craft, who do write about what matters most to them, do go to the next rounds and do eventually win, is by getting a panel of judges that are within the industry that will look into various aspects of the performance, the writing, the presence on stage as well. So our judges have been people who are in the industry. Previously, we've gotten judges who are professors from UNISA, for example, Professor Oliphant from UNISA. We've gotten slam champions in the US, Safia Al-Hilo, who was a judge as well. We've got an Philippa Yadavilis, who is a lecturer at Wits, lecturing creative writing there. We have had Lebo Masangu as well, who herself is a spoken word poet and also a writer, So having such panels in the judging panel that has enabled us to really ensure that there's good quality. And if there's literally any poet that's just there to, yeah, I'm here to win, trust you me, they will not get very far.
Okay.
It gets sifted through. You'll get the snaps you from the audience and all of that, but at the end of the day, the judges are they who are actually not about the frills and the spice, let me put it that way, and all about the arts, all about the work.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. I think that pretty much covers quite a lot about what you guys have done and how you guys operate. But then now I'd like to extend it from the present that we are in to the future that we are heading, right? And one thing I'd like to talk about is, what is your outlook on poets making a living for poetry, basically? How far down do you see that? Like an average poet, I don't consider all the people we've talked about to this point average poets, right? And I believe that they can make a living from the art in some way or form by, doing other things. But what's your outlook of an average poet who just writes, poetry from the heart, as we say, but it's not what we mostly consider top-notch poetry in the country because we have beasts, but they are actually making a living off of that.
Yeah.
So
Oh.
how far down do you think that is? How many years do you think that is?
So, I don't think I would be able to explicitly put a number to the years, right? However, I do acknowledge the fact that we are slowly going or getting towards that point. It takes a whole lot of factors for us to actually get to a point where poets are making a living solely from poetry and a good living as well, right? Because that's quite important. Beyond just making a living, you need to make a good living. And there's a lot of poets who are actually making a living right now, as poets, right? But now, whether it's a good living, that's something to be discussed further. So for more people now to be able to do such, there is a lot more work that needs to be done, and from various aspects as well. People really or often look at it as, here's a poet on stage reciting poetry, gets paid, and done, right? And that's how poets have been coming into the game. Thinking as well that, all I need is my words and my performance skills in Yana, and I'll go on stage, perform, and I'll make money. No, it goes beyond all of that. There is the aspect of people need to, first of all, know who you are, right? People get booked because they are known. People get asked to commission or get commissioned to write work because they are known by people in various industries, from the advertising industry to corporate and such, and people and other people within the literary industry as well, their peers, right? So it takes all of that to come together, right? For you to ensure that you are in the media often, and that will require you to possibly get someone who's solely responsible for putting you out there within the media, or maybe even getting a PR company to represent you, in media and such. Then it requires someone else who will actively go out trying to get you gigs, trying to ensure that the right people are aware of your work and who you are. It's not a one person job, and that's what a whole lot of poets get wrong. A lot of the other art forms and industries, they are thriving right now because there's a whole lot of teams that have been put together to ensure that that specific entity, that specific person, goes on and makes money. And then at some point in your career, you will be at a point whereby now everyone knows you, and you will get those bookings for the mere fact that, hey, you are Ishmael Sibiya, you are this poet, and this is the type of work that you do, and how, this is how you do it. And people will be like, this is what I want for my specific show, you know? This is what I want for my event, my TV show, my whatnot, my radio show, you know? So all of these things. And we as the industry players, for example, us as Hear My Voice, we are there to create platforms to have these poets notice, to get these poets into spaces whereby they would have never been before. And by spaces like that, what I mean is, for example, we've done work with the Embassy of Sweden, whereby we've been doing poetry sessions at the ambassador's home, right? And there you'd have other ambassadors from other countries present, you'd have diplomats present, you have all these people in various high positions within the communities, from nonprofits to deans in universities, present at that space, right? At the ambassador's home. Now, these people get access to, you know, different audiences, and that's what we've been trying to do as well. So all these things play a factor. All these things play a factor, and that's the one way we can definitely ensure that people can often make a living out of the poetry that we've been doing all this time.
So just to put everything you said in a nutshell, so you say poets need to get their name out there and need to put a team together to take care of the formalities that are tied into making a living off the art, basically.
Yeah, and pretty much think of it as a business. You know, it is a business at the end of the day.
No, I've heard a lot of poets actually say that statement. I remember even Vusmuzhpakathi Phakathi saying poets are, or artists in general, are quick to call themselves artists, even though they don't spend 8 hours a day on the art. Unlike a person who, in any other trade, who spends 8 hours a day on that specific trade, a call center worker spends 8 hours a day in the, doing handling calls and stuff like that. But artists spend X number of hours chilling, and then 1 hour on the art, and
There you are a poet now when you literally just spent 30 minutes writing this piece, and you haven't rehearsed in ages, you haven't put together work in ages and such. So that's an interesting take, right? I am a bit too, I'm two ways when it comes to that. I agree with that, but at the same time, I believe that you can be an artist, and you know it's really up for further debate, and maybe another time, but you can be an artist and still do a whole lot of other things, right? At the end of the day, it's also a matter of the work and the output, right? If you're still outputting the work and you only spend 2 hours doing that, at the end of the day, you still have the work done, right? There might be someone else who's spending 8 hours doing the work and have a final output. They might just be a bit better than you, but at the end of the day, both of you have created
Produced.
art, produced art, you know? So yeah, I'm just, yeah,
I
I would
think
say.
what he also wanted to stress was the administration side of it is also within the 8 hours.
Yes.
because if you want to collaborate with someone, sometimes there's a lot of administration that has to get done, like how's the copyright going to be owned, blah 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 blah. And these are conversations I never had while I was still doing poetry. We just wrote the art and performed it, and that was it. We just collaborated, and that was it. And we never said, oh, okay, this is how we're going to deal with the copyright and all these other administrative tasks behind it. So I think that's what he was also talking about.